Man, I gotta find out where I can get my hands on some of them sweet, sweet gold crocodiles. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Decomposition Podcast, where we hyperanalyze all of your favorite terrible songs. My name is Brad, and with me, as always, is my co-host, Katie. Katie, how are you doing tonight?
I have no idea what you're talking
about.
You
have no idea? You haven't looked at these lyrics at all yet, have you?
I haven't, no. Actually.
Wow, okay, so this is going to be like a real-time reaction to the lyrics.
Yeah.
To what is a 32-year-old song.
Yeah.
Okay.
It is. Okay. The day got away from me a little bit. I did other research. Like, I have something else I want to talk about that's...
But it doesn't have to do with the lyrics.
I'm going
to
say it's loosely related to the song and the parts of the lyrics that I know.
Well, but, glad you got some serious notes on that.
I never had the time I usually have to analyze the lyrics, and I had no idea that there's something about golden crocodiles.
Okay. Well, you just wait. I don't want to spoil anything for you.
Oh, yeah. But, wait till you hear what the golden crocodiles do.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So this is this our first episode of 2019?
This is our first episode of 2019.
This will have had been our first episode of 2019.
It is definitively not 2019 right now as we sit here. But this is our first episode of 2019.
And I would like to take a moment to introduce our guest, somebody who is brand new to Decomposition Podcast, local comedian. She hosts a monthly show at the Town Pub in Bloomfield, New Jersey, as well as one in the city that I can't remember where. Grizel Cabrera.
Hi, guys.
I always want to say everybody as if we have a live audience. Mm-hmm. So, but hey, Grizel, welcome to our house.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here with you guys.
As it turns out, we are neighbors-ish.
Yes.
Yeah. Pretty close.
Pretty close.
Pretty close.
So we've seen you perform a handful of times at various venues in the area. We are so happy that our dear friend Michelle got us in touch with you so that we could have you here today. Can you tell us a little bit about the monthly show that I'm forgetting?
Well, the monthly show in Bloomfield is called Good Vibes Only Comedy Show. It's a monthly show that happens every second Wednesday of the month, which I co-produce with my friend and fellow comedian, Ty Rainey. We started it in June, and it's been going pretty well. I'm excited to kind of bring comedy to the community. So that's always great.
Yeah.
So I'm excited. And I also host another show or produce another show in the city called Overripe Comedy for more mature comedians. So that's really fun as well. So there you have it. So
where in the city can people find that?
New York City. That happens every third Tuesday of the month at the Gin Mill on the Upper West Side.
Okay.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Grizel, something we like to ask all of our guests their first time here on the podcast. Do you remember what the first album you ever owned or listened to was?
I do remember. And just let me just give you a little bit of history on
me.
I am Hispanic. I am a Latina. I'm half Cuban, half Dominican. And so my first ever album was a Latino boy band called Menudo.
Menudo!
Oh. Menudo!
I was sure you were going to say Magneto.
Menudo. It was hardcore. I mean, talking the Tiger Beats.
Yeah.
The Tiger Beat magazines. My crush on this boy band was Ricky.
Sure.
I did the poster.
That was
I did
the Vita Loca before he lived the Vita Loca.
Yeah, before he lived the Vita Loca.
Yeah. Oh, Ricky, as in Ricky Martin.
That's the
one. I'm just catching up.
Ricky is a great man. But let me give you some more. Maybe you don't know. Ricky Martin came later in the Menudo band. The original Ricky. There was another dude named Ricky.
Oh, okay. So this was Ricky not Martin. Ricky Martin.
No, this is not Ricky Martin.
This was not one who shook his bonbon.
No. Pre-bonbon.
Pre-Copa de Vida.
Yeah.
Well, because Menudo has been around for like an incredibly long time, right? And just like as boys grew out of the band, they replaced them with
Now I believe they are just MDO, actually.
Are they really? MDO?
Yeah. Yeah.
They've abbreviated
I mean, there's so many letters in Menudo, you know? You name yourself after some type of Puerto Rican stew.
Kids these days want less letters all the time.
Exactly.
Menudo in Spanish means change.
Does it?
It means like loose change, money change, kind of stuff.
Not cambia. It's not cambia.
No, no.
No, okay.
But yeah, that was it. And it was like hard. We had a club. A Menudo club. We met every week. Oh my God. Wore the shirts.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So it was a big thing. So that was my first album, I think, as a kid. And then I graduated to something a little bit heavier. And my first, you know, album that I brought with my own money and I went to the concert at, was the Beastie Boys, License to Ill.
Okay. Oh, classic Beastie Boys. Yeah,
cool. Everyone has cool first albums. Yeah.
Like Menudo.
Oh, come on. And the Beastie Boys. Well,
and then I made a jump. That was like a big jump. And
that
then
was,
I
went that's to the, a huge that was jump.
Huge jump. And that was huge. That was, I'm just like three white kids. Like, rap. What? Yes, let's do it.
I want to get entirely on the other side of this fence and just see what that world is like.
So wait, did you see the Beastie Boys live? Like,
I saw the Beastie Boys live in Passaic. I was 15 years old.
In Passaic?
I can't even remember.
The Passaic Theater used to be
at
a huge
theater
venue.
That's like not there at all anymore?
Probably. Wow. I went with my friend, and of course my parents didn't. If they had any idea what was this even in store for us that evening. And I remember my friend's parents dropped us off at the concert, and it was like nothing I've ever seen. I mean, you know, they're infamous for this specific concert having like a big penis coming out of a box.
I didn't know that.
That was their closer. Oh. That was their closer. Okay.
You wouldn't want to open with that. That's too soon.
Yeah. That was their closer. Like there was, I'm not kidding, like a 15 foot tall penis ejecting out of a box. That was how they ended it.
That was their Jack in the Box.
That was their Jack in the Box. Yes, exactly.
Was this, was there a song that accompanied that, or was it just like, hey, everybody, for the next 3 minutes, let's stare at this, what I'm assuming was an inflatable penis.
Yeah, it was Brass Monkey.
Oh, okay.
Clearly.
Yeah, that funky monkey.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow. Uh-huh. That sounds incredible.
It was.
How many times have you seen Beastie Boys since?
That's in another time later on, probably about 7 years afterwards.
Okay. Yeah. So that would have been like Sabotage.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
I forget the name of that album, but
maybe it's Sabotage. Who knows?
Maybe it's Sabotage.
But oddly enough, they opened for Madonna. Like that's
at the Passaic Theater.
No. But that's how they started to get traction.
Gotcha.
That they opened for Madonna, which is kind of like a weird, you know, group choice. But there you have it. Yeah.
Well, before Kanye West got famous, I saw him open up for the Rolling Stones.
Really?
Yeah, and like had to be like somewhere between 2005 and 2006.
Okay.
I went to see the Rolling Stones. I think it was a giant stadium. I'm trying to remember. And the opener was Kanye. But it was like before he had kind of broken into the mainstream. Or maybe it was 2003. Somewhere early 2000s.
Yeah.
I think I was out of college though. So.
Did he have his jaw wired shut at the time?
I don't really remember. I just remember being like, oh, this guy's kind of fun.
You weren't like, this guy's a genius. I hope he tells me he's a genius.
I can see his political aspirations from here.
Exactly.
No, I was like, this guy's kind of fun. It's a shame he's playing for this audience that's here to see the Rolling Stones who doesn't care about him at all.
Yeah,
that
you
was
just
like really
wonder like these
happening.
Really weird pairings sometimes when you go to concerts and you see the opening act and I'm just like, how does that work? It doesn't seem to have the same audience.
Like a festival, but then nothing's an opening act. Then they're all just like a shared bill. So.
Yeah. Right. By the way, Beastie Boys album with Sabotage on it is called Ill Communication, and it came out in May 1994.
All right. Mm-hmm. Well, now that we've gotten that knocked out.
Yeah. You're welcome.
Yeah.
I'm assuming you're saying that to the listeners.
No, to all of you.
You're welcome,
to everybody.
To everybody. To Griselle, to you, to Copper, who's asleep over here, like to everyone.
Thank you. So the song we are going to discuss today, Griselle, when we asked you what song you thought you would want to talk about, you responded saying that you are an 80s baby.
That's correct.
And that is your jam. That is what you...
I don't think she said the words 80s baby. I don't think she referred to herself as a baby.
I'll go with baby. I'll say baby.
Yeah, let's stick with that.
Yeah, I'll go with that.
So the song we are here to discuss today is the 1986 hit by the Bengals, their first number one single, Walk Like an Egyptian, off of their album Different Light. This song went to number one on the Billboard Hot 100, number one on the U.S. Cashbox, number 15 on Billboard's Hot Dance Music. This got a VMA nomination for the Best Group Video in 1987. This song went to number one in 8 different countries, one of which was not Egypt. I want to point that out. Yeah. Different Lights went 3 times platinum. Now, Grizel, as the aforementioned 80s baby that you did or did not proclaim yourself to be, that I might just be putting words in your mouth here, do you have any strong connection to this song? Was this a song that you enjoyed?
I did enjoy it. Yeah. I do remember it coming out. And one of the reasons why I did, it was a very kind of girl heavy time. If you remember, the Go-Go's was out that time. Sure. Cyndi Lauper was there as
Tiffany.
Well.
Pre-Tiffany.
Madonna was in the mix.
This was pre-Debbie Gibson too. Like,
yeah.
Are they later 80s?
Yeah, it was a couple of years later. Okay. Probably about 2 or 3 years later.
So it was like a girl band. So I remember like, oh my God, that's cool. That's pretty cool. And I remember Walk Like an Egyptian. And it's the type of song that, you know, the second that you hear it, you're just like, all right, I'll do it. I'll walk like an Egyptian. Sure. You know, you 4 girls are inspiring this. Let's do it.
Well, this is certainly a song that the core message is, let's have a dance. The rest of it's kind of just like nonsense, but that's really all you need from this song.
Does like, walk like Egyptian mean dance?
Well, it certainly became.
It definitely like, means like do a weird walk.
Yeah.
It's not
like an Egyptian. I know that much though.
I mean, if we take the first line of the lyrics and it's just like the old paintings on the tombs. Okay. Mm-hmm. So we're thinking hieroglyphics. Egyptians, sure. We think hieroglyphics. They're walking kind of that way.
Sure. Everybody's seen like the pictures from the inside of the tombs, that which is like engraved in the, I don't want to get too heavy into it before we discuss the actual lyrics, but but the rest of the song that kind of like surrounds that imagery is kind of nonsense.
Well, I guess I'm trying to figure out, and maybe we'll discover it, you know, on the fly, what the connection is between the chorus of Walking Like an Egyptian and the events that are listed in all the verses.
You know, exactly.
Are these verses living life like you're walking like an Egyptian? And if so, like, what does that mean?
Right.
I see.
Yeah.
Okay.
So this song doesn't have a proper chorus. It really just, again, like so many of the songs we've been doing recently, it just has the tag of walk like an Egyptian at the end of the verse.
You wouldn't say the chorus was like, oh, way, oh, I think that could be.
Way, oh, way, oh, yeah, way, oh, way, oh.
Yeah. Yes.
I guess.
They do it a number. Yeah, could be.
They do it in between every verse. You have walk like an Egyptian and then the way, oh, way, oh, way, oh,
way, oh, way, oh, and then walk like.
Okay. That way. You be right.
This song in a cover band, Katie. I know.
Oh gosh, you do play this song in a cover band.
Oh wow. All right.
So, not well. I just want to point that out.
It doesn't come up that often.
No, it does not. Grizel, as our guest, can I ask you to read the first verse for us?
Oh, with pleasure. All the paintings on the tombs, they do the sand dance, don't you know? If they move too quick, oh, way, oh, they're falling like a domino.
You're like you have to read it like in the beat, right? Yeah. Like
all the bazaar men by the Nile, they got the money on a bet. Gold crocodiles, oh way oh, they snap their teeth on your cigarette.
You get
there it,
it
is. There it is.
Gold crocodiles.
Foreign types with their hookah pipes say, oh way oh way, oh way oh way oh way. Walk like an Egyptian.
You actually have to sing this song.
Yeah.
It's almost impossible to not sing it.
The OAOs, like, I think necessary.
Some
necessary.
Come right out of the gate and give the song a compliment.
Yeah.
It definitely has this really catchy, definitive rhythm to it.
Yeah.
Like, undeniable just rhythm, not just behind the music, behind the words as well, where you kind of just like sink right into singing it.
But to your point, I also have the reflex immediately as I was, you know, saying the lyrics to, you know, stick out my hand. I had to hold myself back.
Absolutely. Like, I'd like to say that as a male from Northern New Jersey, I can really relate to the, oh, way, oh, Hey, whoa.
Hey. Really, that's a different way.
I was reading that today and I was like, oh, way, oh, hey, whoa. That's how that popped into my brain.
I do have a question about the sand dance.
Okay.
Is there something a little cringy about they do the sand dance?
Well, okay. So that there's an annotation on Genius Lyrics that says, Cleopatra's Nightmare, or the Sand Dance, was a routine by the British music hall act Wilson, Keppel, and Betty.
Okay.
So
I'll take it then.
Yeah. It's not some specific to the sand dance that Egyptians do.
All right.
Do you know what this song was inspired by, Katie? Of course you don't know.
I have no idea.
So evidently, so the writer of this song is a guy named Liam Sternberg, and he wrote this song after seeing people try to keep their balance awkwardly while riding on a ferry.
What?
Yeah. So evidently that's what he says his inspiration for writing this song was watching people awkwardly waver on a ferry, and imagining their arms reminded him of all the etchings in the tombs of Egypt, of ancient Egypt.
That's a stretch. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Oh, it's a huge stretch. Yeah, You're absolutely right.
I've been on a ferry a time or two, and I have seen people lose their balance, and never did I think, like, oh, you look like an
Egyptian.
Now,
doing the sand dance, don't you know?
Now, the sand dance.
I'm really glad that the sand dance isn't just totally in poor taste, because I was concerned.
Sure. I want to know, like, how are paintings going to move so fast that they cause other paintings to fall down like a domino?
This is an excellent question.
Thank you.
This is real. There is no answer to that question.
I've asked so many questions about the lyrics, and as we go on, I'm just going to ask all of them.
If they move, which is the pictures, like that pronoun has to be attached to the noun of the old paintings.
The paintings that are doing the sand dance.
Yeah, but you're forgetting about the impetus of the song, which was the ferry, thing. No, the ferry. And if you're on a ferry,
sure,
you can fall down like a domino.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I agree with that.
Yeah.
Yes, but to the casual listener...
who does not have this ferry backstory. Yeah.
Exactly. There we go. Yeah. So they're assuming that the paintings on the tomb will fall over or fall down like a domino. You need that context to get that reference. Now, he's not talking about all the old people on the ferry, don't you know? He's talking about the old paintings.
I mean, like, if the old people on a ferry started to do, a soft shoe tap dance on a pile of sand, they might knock each other down like dominoes. But a bunch of, inanimate pictures carved into a wall are not going to move at all. So they're certainly not going to move so fast that they fall down like dominoes.
Guys, that's question one first stanza that we've got. So this is garbage bullshit writing, right?
I would agree with that.
Yeah.
I would say yes. I would say yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally singable. Totally singable.
Totally singable.
And I'm on board. I will sing all of these words without processing a single one of them, and I'll just be like, hey, that's a good song.
Must just sing like blah, blah, blah when I sing along to this song. Make up the
words. And there's something to be said for that type of songs where you're just like, you can just throw your own spin on it.
Or you'll hit like certain key phrases.
Right.
Like I'll sing like, they're falling down like a domino.
I think I would just get to domino. I'd be singing like, and you do a thing. A domino.
Yeah, absolutely. You know? And I think that goes on throughout the entirety of this song.
I don't know any of these words. These words come as a shock to me.
So now let's move to the second stanza, Katie, where I have several more questions that come along. Gold crocodiles. Let's start there.
Okay. All right.
Anybody got anything?
Gold crocodiles. Okay. Maybe when the sunlight hits the crocodile on the Nile.
It looks golden.
It looks golden.
But let's connect this to the previous thought. Katie, how do you like that? Am I English teaching?
You are totally English teaching now. You go for it. I'm just staring at these words.
Right.
What is happening?
Okay, so you want to find a link with gold crocodiles and tombs and paintings? Is that
All the bizarre men by the Nile, they got the money on a bet.
The gold crocodile's next to them, and they're smoking cigarettes at the bazaar.
The bizarre men.
The bizarre men.
Not bizarre men.
But B-A-Z-A-A-R men.
Sure, on the Nile.
on the Nile, not the Helbazar.
I don't want anybody to think that the Bengals are calling men on the weirdos. Nile are weirdos.
No, yeah. Just they're at a bazaar selling their wares. But they didn't get the money from selling their wares. They got their money on a bet. Yeah. That's another thing I have questions about that go unanswered. But yeah, they snap their teeth on your cigarette. I guess she's talking directly to the bazaar men there, and the golden crocodile is stealing their cigarettes.
None of these thoughts have any type of connection. It's all just individual.
No, they're independent thoughts. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They're independent thoughts.
All of which are evidently inspired by seeing people awkwardly wave their arms on a ferry while
like Lionel, what's his puss, whatever Richie? His name was. No, what's his name? The song
Liam Sturmer.
Did you say Lionel Puss? You said Lionel Puss?
I said Lionel, what's his puss?
Oh, what's his puss? Okay.
Yeah.
So, what is his puss?
Sternberg.
Oh, Sternberg.
And his first name is
Liam.
Liam. Okay. Liam.
Okay.
Liam, what's his puss? Excuse me. Do you think he was just like, hi?
No, I think here's what's going on. You know how we give like artistic license to some movies? Mm-hmm. I think that we have to do that here with this song as well, where you're just like, you got to give him some leeway to just kind of express himself.
Brad, do you think this is another one we just have to chalk up to like stream of consciousness writing? Like he thought about Egyptians and like this is the flow of ideas that just
without
poured out
doing
of
any
him?
Like actual like research or looking into Egyptians.
Well, you wouldn't, because stream of consciousness is just the writing that's generated by your
subconscious. So wait a second, Katie. Are you comparing this to the works of famed author Samuel Beckett?
No! No, I'm not.
Because you've done that before.
I've used him as an example of stream of consciousness writing, but I've never said that any of the terrible songs that we've talked about are on the same level.
I think you said that about LFO.
No, I did not. How dare you? I never would.
But didn't, if I'm recalling correctly, which I must be, right?
Okay.
You said that if you dig away the bullshit, you can get to a narrative.
Yeah. Yes. With not all stream of consciousness writing, but when we talked about, this is like a throwback here.
Oh, wow.
But,
okay.
So we talked about stream of consciousness writing, and I used Samuel Beckett as an example, and he has a speech. There's like a long monologue in the play Waiting for Godot or Waiting for Godot. I don't care how you pronounce it. Whatever. I don't want to get into that argument.
I thought it was Godot.
Or Godot.
Yeah.
But there's a long speech by this character named Lucky that sounds like nonsense. But if you pull out all the nonsense in that stream of consciousness speech, there's one sentence that talks about how like man inevitably wastes and pines. So it like has to do with the meaninglessness of life. You're really taking me down a road.
Yeah.
Now.
Well,
you're
not
using that fancy education you got.
I'm not
though.
Sure we're going to find that with the Bengals.
No.
Or Bengals. They're not even the Bengals.
No, they're not the Bengals. It's Bengals.
Yes.
Yeah. Formerly the Bangs.
The Bangs.
The Bangs.
Were they just Bangs then, or were they the Bangs?
They were the Bangs.
Yeah.
The Bangs. And we were talking about it before we started that it was the Bangs. And then they were being ironically sued by a band in New Jersey for copyright of, you know.
So I have a quote from the guitar player, Vicky Peterson.
Yeah.
She says that, quote, they were an all-boy bar band in New Jersey. I think maybe they thought they could get some money, evidently $20,000 as it turns out, by selling us the name, but we chose to add a couple letters instead. So, and then Susanna Hoffs goes on to say that, you know, it was kind of a Beatles reference, which, as we were also discussing before, was like their big influence. In fact, they formed shortly after John Lennon was killed.
Right.
After they... I think it was like a one ad in a newspaper, and then they just sat there chatting about the Beatles for hours and determined that like they could have a band together.
Right. So, they bonded.
Yeah.
That's cool.
They bonded over the death. Exactly.
I love that they are this band of cool women.
Mm-hmm.
And I love the video with their like big 80s hair and their like skin tight dresses and jumpsuits. Like they definitely have a super cool vibe about them.
Mm-hmm.
And so I want to like this. Well, no, I actually do like this song.
I like this song.
I want to think this song is like good quality though. And it's like, nah.
But you know, talking about this, this is, although this is the song that they're most known for, they hated the song.
Oh, yeah.
Because it doesn't represent who they were as a band.
So they seem to feel that way about a lot of their big hits. They feel the same way about Manic Monday, which was famously written by Prince.
And what was also like our second choice for this episode. We're going back and forth between the two.
So that song was written by Prince, who was billed as, quote, Christopher, because he didn't want to have his name. But people speculated that basically because he had a crush on Susanna Hoffs, the, I'll say lead singer for lack of a better term, he gave it to them basically as an attempt to sleep with her. But also,
that's all speculation.
That's
right?
all speculation. Like, evidently they were flirty, but nothing romantic happened between the two of them. But same thing with like Eternal Flame, which personally speaking, my favorite Bengals song.
I love that song.
Yeah. I love that song.
I had no idea it was the Bengals because, you know, I'm not good at attaching artists and their songs to one another.
But they were trying to put themselves out there as this, like, at the time, modern take on the Beatles. You know, there's a lot of four-part harmonies going on. It's very, like, California kind of surfy sounding. And so there's a lot of Mamas and the Papas in there. And there's a lot of the Beach Boys in there. And there's a lot of the Beatles in there. But yeah, the band did not care for their hit songs. They felt like they didn't accurately represent...
Yeah, who they were as a band.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Is it possible that... I mean, they didn't write this song.
Right.
That this was just, like... voiced it off on them by a record company that said, do this cutesy song, girls, and have a big hit?
No. The song was originally offered to Tony Basil.
I have no idea who that is.
Oh, Mickey, yes, you do.
You're so fine. You're so fine.
You blow my mind.
Hey, Mickey.
Yeah.
She turned it down because she wanted to get out of...
cutesy songs?
No, because she wasn't ready to walk like an Egyptian, clearly. Yeah.
She was actually
That would be the only reason to
she
turn it down.
She didn't have the guts.
She was a
professional dancer who had a hit song and then decided, like, I don't want to be a singer. So she retired from singing. But they were like, yeah, it's a fun song. Let's do it. And then they were all so excited to have this big hit on their hands. But then, Katie, this is my behind the music coming through here. But then it all started to fall apart from this song. I will say this about the first verse. Everything feels Egyptian in verse one.
Foreign types with hookah pipes. That's a nice internal rhyme, I guess.
I like that line.
That is vaguely Middle Eastern and fits with the Egyptian business.
So this entire first verse, if nothing else...
Although, let me just say, I know that Egypt is in North Africa. Let me just, before someone like...
Katie letting people know she knows her geography.
Well, just, like, imagining someone. People love to correct us, you know.
I'm just waiting for someone
to, like, tweet at Decomposition. Well, technically Egypt isn't in the Middle East. It's in North Africa.
North Africa counts as the Middle East, from Morocco all the way around the Fertile Crescent.
I'm just putting it out there.
Yeah.
That I know.
Did you just say the Fertile Crescent?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Turkey and Eurasia, that area.
Oh.
You didn't know that we were really boring nerds.
She had a suspicion. No, I was fine with the crescent, but the Fertile Crescent, I'm just like, wow. Okay.
Crescent's fine, I guess.
Pretty sexy geographical name
there.
I'm all way owed out. Yeah. Wow. Let's go.
Syria? I hardly know.
That, oh my God. I'm Syrian. I'm half Syrian. That's why Brad is. Yeah.
Iraq. Iraq.
These are not good jokes.
Holy bananas. Okay.
You just turned into like an 80-year-old man.
I totally did. Yeah. Way to go, me, huh?
Yeah. And it's like he could go on.
He's got more.
Yeah.
Let's get greasy.
Should we get into the part of the song that, like, abandons Egypt altogether and just goes off the rails?
Okay, let's do that.
Do it. Read this verse, Katie.
Okay, so I just want to remind everyone that we've just come off of, like, the bazaar and the gold crocodile, which is not really Egyptian, I guess. The foreign types with hookah pipes, the Nile, and the old paintings and tombs. And the next verse starts... The blonde waitress.
Yeah.
Blonde waitresses take their trays. They spin around and they cross the floor. They've got the moves. Oh, way, oh. You drop your drink. Then they bring you more. And the school kids, so sick of books, they like the punk and the metal band. When the buzzer rings, OAO, they're walking like an Egyptian.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
All the kids in the marketplace say, wayo, 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 walk like an Egyptian.
There we go.
Yeah.
What?
I have a theory.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm just going to go.
Go for it.
Okay. We have all the men in the bazaar, and I think that's setting kind of like a time and place, mm-hmm. you know, yeah. back in the day.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And then they're like, okay, we're going to fast forward.
Love it.
To 1986, blonde waitresses take their trace.
Yeah.
And they're doing kind of like a...
walk is timeless!
Right.
Frizzell cracked it.
Yeah, I did. I think I'm onto something here.
I agree with you.
Yeah.
I agree with you. Here's the thing. So this verse, it starts off identifying people in society, in this mm-hmm. case, blonde waitresses.
Right.
Whose movement across the floor, not on a ferry, as it turns out.
Yeah. No ferries.
Not a ferry to be found. Represents that of the sand dance.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Verse 1 doesn't do that. Doesn't point out other people making similar movements.
Wait, what are you saying?
What?
I don't understand what you just said.
So a blonde waitress spinning around and crossing the floor
mm-hmm.
moves that like...
They spin.
They spin and they move like these paintings on the tombs.
Yeah.
No.
School kids do not because they are sick of books and they like punk and the metal band. But nobody in Egypt, as it is pointed out, is making that movement with the exception of the paintings that may fall down like a domino.
Okay.
So this is the only example in the song of people moving like an Egyptian.
I'm trying to understand your point. Are you saying the waitresses are the only example in the song of real people walking like an Egyptian?
Yes.
Because they're holding their tray in one hand.
And spinning and crossing the floor.
It's clear that you guys are married because you need to be to get to what you got to because I was lost.
Yeah. It was hard to get there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's like you just cracked the Da Vinci Code. That's what that was.
I will not be insulted on my own podcast.
No, this is a strong marriage is what Grizel is saying.
Katie has to translate Brad to English is what's happening.
I have a Brad to English.
I don't know. I'm kind of still with my original kind of thought process here where it's just where they went old school and they gave us, you know, the guidelines of the Egyptian dance or mm-hmm. people walking.
Golden crocodiles.
Golden crocodiles, you know, what was going on. They're painting the picture of what's happening and then they're bringing it back to modern day. They're giving you blonde waitresses. They're giving you kids in schools, punk bands, metal bands, you know.
I think the kids in school, when the bell rings, they've got their like punk and metal music in their heads and they're walking along, bobbing their heads and moving their arms. And I'm doing a whole thing right now. No one can see.
Yeah,
and it's walking
sure
like
are.
An Egyptian.
I don't buy it though. Like I don't think that kids are actually doing that. I think
oh no. I mean, I work in a high school every
do they
single
Egyptian
day.
Walk?
And I'll tell you what, we don't call it the buzzer. We call it the bell.
Yeah.
But when it goes off, all of a sudden they're all just walking like an Egyptian. And it's 2018, baby. Like,
are they doing that though?
Every day. Would I lie?
Yes.
No.
You would though.
I'm telling you, like, I've got the real
life. Yeah, but
life.
That's something a liar would say. So.
Yeah. I mean, I think we're taking Egyptian. We're taking Egyptian too literal. Do we mm-hmm. need to have our hand out? Can I just not have a backpack on my back?
Well, in that case, you're just walking.
Or maybe those kids in high school are Egyptian.
Maybe
it's an Egyptian high school.
Yes.
Or it doesn't have to be the literal movement of the dance.
Okay.
Or of the walk.
Do go on.
It's the spirit behind it.
But it's not because they're clearly emphasizing the paintings in the tombs and the sand dance.
So I did a little weird research.
Okay.
You know how like I try to do some weird research.
Cool.
I was like thinking to myself, because the only line I know in the song is walk like an Egyptian. And I can just picture the video with, you know, their arms out in those angular poses, walking like an Egyptian. So I Google symbolic meaning of poses and gestures in ancient Egyptian art.
Cool.
And I do a bunch of different configurations of that.
I am on board with this Google search. Yeah.
And I find a source, and I wasn't familiar with this source, so I even did some digging to see how credible it is or isn't. So the source is called Artsy, and it is an online marketplace for art. Like, it's trying to bring, their goal, Artsy's goal, is to like bring art to the world in an accessible way by having this online marketplace. I think they must be
art
like
to the masses,
like Etsy for art. They're artsy. And they do have a blog, and I found they had a blog titled Six Art Historical Poses You Should Know, authored by Sarah. I'm going to guess her last name is pronounced Gottesman. It's Gottesman. And you know me, I was like, well, who the heck is she? And what kind of authority does she have on this? So I looked her up on LinkedIn.
Okay.
And just so you know, she...
wow. This is going deep.
I want to point out that you did not look at the lyrics.
I didn't look at the This is how that happened.
You went straight to this blog author's LinkedIn profile.
Well, yeah, obviously. So she is the collector relations associate for Artsy for over a year now. And before that, she was a museum educator at the Museum of Museum of the City of New York. And before that, she worked for the Teaching Corps at the Met. So, like, she's legit. Like, she's got an art historian background. So now I felt comfortable sharing that information, or this information, with the rest of you.
But, and the information is the six poses. So what are they? To it.
Well, I'm not going to give you all six poses. I'm just going to give you the Egyptian one.
Okay, go.
So the Egyptian's pose, as we know, is the torso facing forward with the head, the hips, and the legs all completely in profile. And the single almond-shaped eye, even though it's in profile, doesn't stare to the side. It stares directly out at the viewer, kind of breaking the fourth wall of the, what's it called, of the image. And there are two reasons why Egyptian hieroglyphic art was done this way. The first one is simply that it was easy to draw, right? One reason is practical. I'm reading now from her blog post. Noses and feet are easier to draw from the side, while eyes and shoulders are easier to draw straight on. Go ahead, you try it. You'll find that this is one of the simplest poses to copy on paper. So there's this whole practical sense behind it. But then there are spiritual, now I'm quoting again, implications. So, quote, the ancient Egyptians believed that souls needed earthly homes, such as sculpted sarcophagi or painted portraits, to survive after death. Designed to convey this sense of eternal life, the composite pose, which is the title for this figuration that we see over and over again, presents figures as unwavering, motionless, and altogether timeless. So maybe that is the spirit of walking like an Egyptian, that this spirit behind walking like an Egyptian is the timelessness of the soul's eternal spiritual life. What do you think, guys?
Yeah.
Probably not.
So, well, I'm wondering, how does this get back to, like, the fairy?
I don't know how it gets back to the fairy.
But I also found information. Now, granted, I did not look up the author's LinkedIn profile or any of their social media, for that matter. But part of it is that I found is that drawing these figures like that was a centuries-long artistic style meant to show a person's body from several angles at once, which indicates like the motion that they're going to, especially when you see it with the hieroglyphics and like the story being told.
And one of the ideas behind it is that the body is positioned in an impossible twist.
Right. Yes. Yes. Much like kids
yoga, aficionados.
Kids in the marketplace. Yes.
Much
that's
like
Indian, that's not Egyptian.
Oh, but there's a whole I didn't go down this rabbit hole, but there's like an Egyptian
yoga
poses symbolic business as well. But I didn't go into that because I didn't think it would be useful to us today. However, maybe kids when they're like moshing to their punk music have their bodies twisted in impossible ways.
You are the oldest person I have ever met.
I'm the oldest 36-year-old you've ever met.
Yeah. Absolutely.
You know the kids when they're moshing.
Yeah, when they're moshing.
I was around in ancient Egypt, and I know how they would dance.
I was a kid in the 90s, and I know what moshing is. That seems like an impossible twist to me.
Well, they do that at the metal band shows.
I felt like we had to look at the actual Egyptian poses if we were going to talk about.
Oh, I agree. I was under the impression that like Egyptians actually didn't pose like that, but as it turns out, there were several pictures of like that.
Although the irony is that it was designed to be like motionless and timeless, but this is walking like an Egyptian, which is inherently filled with motion.
Well, so can I point out something unrelated to what we were just talking about here?
Absolutely.
Well, it is related in that it is about the Bengals.
Or just Bengals.
Just Bengals.
It's the
Bangs, now Bengals.
Bengals. Okay.
So each member was supposed to sing a verse of this song, but the producer, whose name was David Kahn, he did not like the drummer Debbie Peterson's vocals at all. So he just basically like nixed her from the song and relegated her to background vocals.
Griselda's making a face like she knows this.
She watched the same Behind the Music that I did.
I did, but you know, she was relegated to doing the whistling. You know how in the verse?
No, incorrect.
So
that is, I'm glad you brought that up.
Brad just like forcefully pointed a finger at Griselda.
I was
very aggressive.
Totally.
First of all,
really?
I apologize. Yeah.
It was forceful. I mean, it wasn't even.
It was
meant.
An aggressive index finger. Yeah. I'll admit. Okay. I will admit. I have a very forceful.
And it's back again. Put it away.
I'm just trying to understand what it's like to walk in your shoes. Okay. So
the whistling.
The producer did not like Debbie Peterson's vocals. So she was relegated to background vocals. On top of that, they used a drum machine for the track, which means that she did nothing on this song.
But she didn't do the whistling?
She did not do the whistling. That was computer generated. So she just mimed it.
Oh.
Live.
Way-o.
Yeah.
Way-o.
Oh, I feel bad for her.
So this is where like tensions began to arise in the band, because like that's when Susanna Hoff started getting all of the attention. That's, like I said before, you know, lead singer, for lack of a better term, because they were all singers, you know?
Yeah, I don't think a lot of people know that they were actually...
Sure.
They all took turns doing lead vocals on all of their albums.
Yeah.
But they would only produce or push the ones that Susanna Hoff was the lead singer on.
Ooh. Yeah.
To try and push her image and all of that stuff.
Sex sells, you know?
That's a way to... But they're all hot ladies, first of all. But that's a way to breed such tension between the group. Like, how could you expect them to get along when somebody's being, like, elevated amongst or beyond the other members?
Well, because money is the name of the game, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
You think these record producers were interested in anything else other than, like, lining their pockets? You
exactly.
know? And this was a band that had a hot front woman and catchy songs.
Yeah, and she had like, and she could do a side eye. I mean, let's talk about that for a second. Let's talk about the side eye. First of all, like the video, and I'm shocked that it was nominated for like a video award, because the video is not that impressive, only for the fact of just her, Susanna Hoff, shifting her eyes. You know, that would make any like
close up on her eyes.
Yeah. Any kind of like prepubescent, or puberty stricken kid be like, yeah.
Well,
she's looking at me.
So I found a story about that side eye as well. So that's a pretty like iconic part of the video.
Yes.
You know, hence our discussion about it.
It's like Eye Olympics.
It is like Eye Olympics. But Susanna Hoff's evidently had some stage fright issues that she had to work through for several years in the band. And when they were filming this video, which is, you know, like a mimed performance in front of a crowd, one way that she would get over her stage fright is by making eye contact with individual members in the crowd. So she claims that she didn't realize there was a close-up on her at the time, and she was just trying to get over her stage fright by looking at individual members of the audience. Oh, you're shaking your head no. Katie, can you give us the inside scoop?
0%.
I'll tell you why I don't believe it either. I can't speak to her stage fright, but if you watch the whole video, the other girls are doing it as well, only she's doing it the best.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't pay attention to anybody else.
No, they were all doing the shifty eye. It was like part of the, I think they're doing the Egyptian dance with their eyes too.
Maybe.
Yeah. I think they're emulating the like look of the eyes in the
hieroglyphics.
Egyptian hieroglyphics.
That would have been a better factoid to dig up.
Well, yeah. I can't dig that up because I don't know if that...
No. Well, I guess what I'm saying is like that should have been the story that Susanna Hoffs told people.
Right.
Yeah.
Because you don't move your eyes from side to side in time with the music just because you're looking at someone in the crowd. Like, totally. That's stupid.
Totally.
Like, it's happening totally. In time with the music.
Yeah, and my also how she just stops shifting when she's saying, like an Egyptian. And the tongue is going up and the whole, please.
It's very deliberate.
Yeah, it's very.
My instinct is to not make eye contact with anybody in that crowd. So for her to do that, yeah, I agree with you guys. Can I move on to the last verse here?
Absolutely.
Slide your feet up to the street, bend your back. Shift your arm, then you pull it back. Life is hard, you know, O-A-O. So strike a pose on a Cadillac. If you want to find all the cops, they're hanging out in the donut shop. They sing and dance, O-A-O. They spin the clubs, cruise down the block. All the Japanese with their yen. The party boys call the Kremlin. I know it's Kremlin.
That's how they say it.
That's how they say it in the song is Kremlin. And the Chinese know, O-A-O. They walk the line like Egyptian. All the cops in the donut shop say, way-o, 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 walk like an Egyptian. So the first part of this verse, obviously, they are somewhat describing the dance itself.
Yeah.
Right up until they ask you to strike a pose on a Cadillac. That's where things kind of go awry for me.
Well, maybe it's just a plug for Cadillac.
Maybe they were getting paid.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Okay. So
isn't that very like mid-80s though? Just girl posing on the hood of a car?
Yes. Yeah. Very. What was it? Tawny
Catane from the White Snake video. Yeah. Here I go again. Yeah.
Yeah, that was in a Trans Am, I think. Maybe Corvettes. I don't know.
I felt like that reference was very of its time.
I can't even say that I noticed the car in that. So yeah, Trans Am, I'm for sure.
I even like had a weird thought that I don't think Brad's going to like.
Okay.
That the first two lines of that verse where they're just describing the dance just reminded me of the Humpty Dance.
Well, first I limped to the side like my leg is broken. Yeah, shaking and twitching, kind of like he was smoking. Slide your feet up to the street, bend your back, which are not things that I've seen on Egyptian tomb artwork.
Well, do you bend your back? You kind of bend your back.
Yeah.
You don't slide your feet at all.
You can.
You can, if it moves you.
If sand is involved.
If your plan is to dance, I guess your feet have to move, right?
That's the dance they do in the video. They do like a foot slide, then double arms over the head. They wiggle their necks back and forth, and then they go arms out to the side, and they wiggle again.
Then they go back to prayer hands, and then it's like back and forth.
And then
a lot of neck isolation.
Right. Yeah.
Is that part of the Egyptian yoga poses?
They shift your arm, then you pull it back. So this is that.
Yeah, you shift and you get to see Princess Diana do that in the video.
Omar Gaddafi.
Yeah, Gaddafi.
That's upsetting.
So of the three celebrities that we just listed, we have lost
the both. Statue of Liberty and a celebrity.
Oh, very famous.
Okay.
Very famous.
But
I don't know that Gaddafi is a celebrity, but he's so Gaddafi and Princess Di have both shuffled off this mortal
statue
coil.
Statue of Liberty is on her way out too.
Statue of Liberty is doing just fine
now. I don't know.
Well, we'll see what it's like a year from now. Once New Year's rolls around, I don't know. We'll find out. Happy New Year, everybody.
I mean, we're not recognizing the LA Fire Department. I also was walking like an Egyptian.
Yeah. So were several people crossing the street in Manhattan.
Some waitresses.
Right. And some waitresses. Right.
Getting
some
really cops. Literal.
Yeah. And so,
not in a donut shop.
No.
Right.
That's an ugly stereotype.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So. These verses are full of ugly stereotype, I think.
You think so?
I feel...
The cops at the donut shop?
Then I'm not sure what's going on with the Japanese, the Kremlin, and the Chinese. I just feel uncomfortable about
it. I don't think
it.
They're stereotypes, though. They're just thrown saying in. People around the world are dancing like Egyptians.
Why did the Party Boys call the Kremlin?
Kremlin.
Kremlin. Even though...
I don't know. That all other, the Japanese yeah. with their yen.
Yeah, all those Japanese.
Sounds like something my grandma yeah. would say.
It's like, you wouldn't say like, oh, those Americans with their dollars.
The Japanese with their yen.
What does that even mean?
And the Chinese know.
It just feels weird. It feels weird. I don't like it.
The Party Boys call it.
But what they all have in common.
Yeah.
They walk the line.
They walk mm-hmm. the line like
Egyptian.
Like Egyptian. Yeah.
Isn't that a weird line? Because it's a Johnny it's a Cash change.
Yeah.
Well, it is maybe intentionally a Johnny Cash reference or maybe not.
Right.
But then there's not like an Egyptian.
Right.
It's like Egyptian.
Yeah.
It's just that's very grammatically
can we
weird.
Can talk about that for a second where in normal talk, we say Egyptian.
Sure.
And we've spent a good, I think, 20 minutes now, Egyptian.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think I might go old school, you know, from this day forward. And just be like, when somebody tells me they're Egyptian, yeah. so you're Egyptian.
Oh, do you do that like Egyptian?
Yeah, oh, exactly.
I'll tell you what, I am more on board for Egyptian than I am for a Kremlin. Because Egyptian, at least you're pronouncing all of the letters that appear in the word. Kremlin, you're adding a vowel.
An eh. You're adding an eh to it that doesn't exist. Yeah. I like that they say Egyptian when that's convenient and Egyptian when that's convenient. It's actually said both ways in the song.
Is it really?
Yeah. Because in the verses, it's Egyptian, but then they go walk like an Egyptian.
Oh, that's right.
But the question to me is it different singers pronouncing it differently?
Oh, I don't know.
I have no idea.
Yeah.
Because I got to assume, I should have looked into this. I just, out of nowhere. I just threw up on the microphone, as it turns out. Each verse is sung by a different member of the band.
But in the verses, I noticed
every single time they say Egyptian, when it's walk like an Egyptian.
Every walk like an Egyptian is walk like an Egyptian. And every verse is that an Egyptian. Or like Egyptian. Right. I think it's a meter issue. I think they're kind of forcing the meter in those verses and they need it to be Egyptian. And then at the end, once they had done it that way over and over again, even when they changed the line to they like walk the line like, they could have said they walk the line like an Egyptian. But that wouldn't have fit with the other verses, so now we have to go like Egyptian.
Can you think of any instances where Shakespeare did something similar to that?
Probably. Shakespeare was fudging the rhythm all the time.
He was just creating words left and right.
He'd be like, ever doesn't work. I'll just put an apostrophe in there and get rid of a syllable. It's fine.
Err. And it was a V. They would get rid of the V.
Or ne'er.
E apostrophe E-R. Yeah.
Yeah. So never is too many syllables. I need to fudge it to ne'er. Whatever. I'll just take out a V. I'll put an apostrophe. It'll be fine.
So what you're telling me is that the songwriter, Liam Sternberg, or what do you call him? Lionel What's-His-Puss.
Oh, he's like stream of consciousness Shakespeare. He's a brilliant writer.
He's the best of Beckett and Shakespeare crammed together in 1 3.5 minute piece.
Exactly what I'm saying.
That's exactly what you're saying.
Wow, guys. I'm like learning as we go along. Holy bananas. How you kind of just finagle holy that.
Can I point out the phrase holy bananas and how I'm going to steal that
I use it quite a bit.
Do you?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, you've got three kids and you know, sometimes you want to say holy something else.
Yeah.
And, you gotta
and
say
bananas,
bananas
comes into play. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'll tell you what, Katie's stepdad oftentimes refers to dumb people as big dumb bananas.
Oh. Like when my stepfather wants to say like a whole string of expletives about a person, he'd be like, this banana. And you know that is a stand-in for something terrible.
Yeah.
Something truly.
I don't know
that when you're just like, oh, you took out the, like, he's using banana.
You did not use the B word.
You did not use banana.
The B word is the most dangerous. The banana is the most dangerous B word for my stepfather.
Oh, yeah.
For sure. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I've never heard anybody else call like any person a banana until.
But holy bananas is fun. I can, at school, I'm always looking for replacements for expletives. I can't swear as a teacher. You got to find other wacky things to say when you want to swear.
Oh, parents get really creative.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but bananas is one of my faves.
It's a good one.
Yeah.
It's good.
It's fun. Yeah.
I mean, there's something so like just simple and hilarious about it. It's like ridiculous and simple, and I like it.
I don't even remember why we said holy bananas.
I did when we're trying to make, we're trying to kind of tie in.
I got it now.
You know, what was it? Samuel Beckett?
Samuel Beckett. And William
and Shakespeare.
Mm-hmm.
And that the songwriter, I guess, took liberties.
Is his name Lionel?
No.
No.
Liam.
Okay.
And his last name, Katie?
I really wanted to be... oh God! What's his puss? I don't know. I really want his name to be Lionel.
No, it's not.
Liam
Sternberg.
Good. That's not what I would have guessed
at all. So I have a couple other factoids. If I could just list them off.
Yeah, lay it on us.
Really, just have the one. So I have a quote here from Vicky Peterson. Quote: "I didn't believe that our label would actually release Walk Like an Egyptian as a single because it was just too weird."
Fair.
The other factoid I have here is Michael Steele, who went by Mickey.
Yes.
I forget what she, I think, she, I guess she played bass guitar. She used to be in the band The Runaways with Joan Jett and Lita Ford.
Whoa, she's so cool.
So, yeah. Bengals, who had more hit songs than the two of them.
They did?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
How many hit songs do they have? Three?
So we've already listed those three. And then they also did a version of Simon and Garfunkel's Hazy Shade of Winter.
Oh, that was so good.
Yeah. It's good.
And
it was
rocks.
It was in the Less Than Zero movie.
That's right. Which, Katie, and did you ever watch that movie?
I'm an enormous Bret Easton Ellis fan, and I've never watched the Less Than Zero movie.
Oh, my gosh.
Is it good? Because my hesitation is always that the movie won't be good.
Bret Easton Ellis hated it.
He hates, I think, most of the movies.
Well, and you know what? It doesn't matter in that regard. It's just such a classic film, like a period film, that you kind of need to watch it, that kind of thing.
Who started that? I forget who started that, but it was somebody big.
Hazy Shade of Winter, by the way, is really their sound. So if you back and listen to their version of it, it's really what the Bengals is all about. And they really loved releasing that single, for example, because it represented more of who they were as a band.
So that would be the kind of sound that they would say, this is us, this is our kind of like fingerprint, basically.
Right.
And Walk Like an Egyptian is record label saying, like, let's make some money, gals.
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. Now I really have to go listen to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm going to need to watch this movie. I would say that Less Than Zero is my least favorite Bret Easton Ellis novel, but I still love it.
Okay.
Like, I love his work. And I think it's incredible that he wrote that when he was
college. What other
American Psycho?
Oh, is that him?
Yeah, okay. Rules of Attraction. What Glamorama, Lunar Park.
Oh, wow. Glamorama. I read that.
He has a series of short stories, which I can't remember the title to right now, that are really great.
Andrew McCarthy starred in the Less Than Zero movie.
Oh, that's like at the height of him being famous.
Yeah.
And he's a really good actor. Okay. I'm going to watch this movie. Okay. We're watching this movie.
But yeah. So Simon and Garfunkel's song fits right in with what the Bengals were trying to sound like.
Right.
You know, that
was, so. Well, I'm going to listen to that and maybe get a new appreciation for Bengals. It feels weird to not say the Bengals.
Not to say,
Yeah.
Just
I
like
agree.
You can't say Bronx. You always have to say the Bronx.
The Bronx, yeah.
That's a good point.
No, it's not the Bronx.
That's
it's Bronx.
That's a very good point.
Yeah. You wouldn't say the Brooklyn.
That's true.
The Queens.
The Long Island.
Right. Exactly. It's Bronx, but people say the Bronx.
Yeah. Although I might start calling our
maybe
town
it's,
the
maybe
Bloomfield.
It's words that start with B that you need to put like
Brooklyn.
Yeah.
Bloomfield.
Yeah.
The Bloomfield.
I always
the
call
field.
It the Bloomfield.
We're in the field. We're in Bloom.
Brad and I have gotten out of the nut. We're in the field.
We busted out of the nut and now we're in the field.
Oh, wow. Okay.
That's just, guys, that's just whatever, pervs. So, Katie, can you slap a grade on this?
I don't know. I don't know if I can. This is such a weird one. What is even...
Is this an ungradable song?
What is even the assignment here?
Well, let's just... before we wrap up, let's just talk about... We didn't talk about the dance, just the dance.
Okay.
Like, when we hear the song, do you have the impulse to do the dance?
No. I do not at all.
I do.
You're insane,
do you?
Brad.
Oh, my gosh. I said it before, and I'll say it again. When you hear this song or songs like it, like YMCA,
yeah,
the Macarena, the Electric Slide, you are doing that shit. So, right. Okay, yeah. You were doing some version of it, whatever, some kind of reflex.
The cha-cha
whether
slide
you
comes
want
on,
to yeah. or not.
Like, you're sliding to the left.
Yes.
You're two
you're
hops
stomping,
one time.
Yeah. You're stomping two times, whatever you need to do.
Crisscross.
You're doing YMCA. You're doing the YMCA.
Right. Well, okay. Yeah. I mean, I'm a 37-year-old white male.
Yeah.
Yeah. Of
okay.
course I'm doing the YMCA.
Thank you. Thank you.
It's coded in my DNA.
Okay. All right. And you're also, the Macarena comes on, you may not knowing, but you're going, hey, Mac, and you're right. clapping, you're doing something, you're doing
doing
it.
A hop on, all right.
Yeah,
whatever.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you
you're
what.
You're not walking like an Egyptian?
No, I would sing the precious few lines of this song that I know without even realizing it. But at no point am I like, I don't think I'm shifting my arms, then pulling it back.
If someone had videotaped our conversation, videotaped, I just said.
Oh, boy.
Someone had filmed.
Digitally filmed.
Digitally filmed our conversation. They would have seen Grizel and I walk like an Egyptian over and over again.
Yeah.
Totally inadvertently. Just
totally.
While you're talking
yes.
about it, you sort of like
just
have
instinctively,
to do it.
Yeah. Just instinctively.
But walking. I guess
yeah,
you
but
didn't
I'm just
do
saying
it.
That yeah. is what, like, I think that's what we have to, like, you songs that you instinctively do that dance to.
Mm-hmm.
No, I definitely see what you're saying. I guess I'm just not a person who instinctively does a dance when I hear this song.
Well, you are in the minority, sir. Yeah,
totally.
That's fine. That's yeah. fine. Yeah. We need representation.
You know, I think even so. Copper is, you know,
he is did
constantly licking
a
like
bit.
An Egyptian.
Yeah. Yeah. He's having a good lick right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, so that's where I think props is needed to be mm-hmm. given.
Well,
to this
and that's
song
why
that.
This is like an enduring song.
Yes.
That's why this is a song that people like still enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
Like you put this song on at a crowded bar.
Yeah.
People are going to love the hell out of it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think when I was in dancing school, I didn't do a dance to this, but I do yeah. think that like a group did a dance to this in little Cleopatra outfits, which is
yeah.
probably adorable.
Kids
you know,
are probably
and my,
still
my
doing
kids, that. Various ages, they don't know much about Egyptians and they still, you know.
You wait till they get to high school social
studies. They swing their hand back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, Katie, no grade.
I can't even imagine what the assignment is here. I, like, can't decide whether this is bad or not bad. This is tough. I would need a rubric. I don't know. I need to know what was the writing prompt. I don't know.
Well, fine work, Lionel What's-His-Puss, for really.
Lionel What's-His-Puss.
I'm going to adopt
32
that.
Right,
okay,
years
no,
later.
Wait. Press yeah. pause. That helped. I can give it a grade.
Okay.
If this is supposed to be a song about people losing their balance on a ferry,
yeah.
I think it has to get an F.
Okay.
Because yeah. it's not about that
at all. Wow.
Right.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Or maybe.
It was just inspired.
Go
by
on this journey
yeah,
with me.
Yeah, we'll do this.
Maybe it's an A
uh-huh.
because it's such an abstraction of that idea. So if it's like, you know what I mean? If the assignment is like, observe something in real life,
yeah.
but then write about it as something else completely, A plus.
Okay.
Yeah.
So here's
so average it out, it's a C. I
here's
don't know.
My hypothetical.
Okay.
Throughout the course, I'm in your class.
Okay,
right?
This is
I'm
never an assignment in my class, by the way.
Okay, well, go on this journey with me.
Okay. I'll yes and you right now.
So, I'm a student in your class. Throughout the course of the year, you give two different assignments. One, write a song about people on a ferry
mm-hmm.
that are awkwardly trying to keep their balance.
Right.
Two, later in the year, write an abstraction of that.
All right.
I hand in this exact same piece of work both times.
It's like an F and an A. Yeah, I don't know. Or at least it's an F and at least a B.
You wouldn't say like, why are you handing this in a
well,
second?
Well, that's the thing. We would have, no, well, that's a whole other issue.
Yeah.
But we would have got, this would never be your final product for that first assignment because we would have gone through a revision process.
Yeah.
And I would have challenged you on this. I would have said, Brad, this is really creative and interesting. There's a lot of interesting stuff going on here. But the prompt.
Yeah.
Right. Is to write a song about a ferry.
Uh-huh.
Can you show me where this is about a ferry? And if you could, kudos to you. And that go and I'd go on that journey with you because you know that I'm not
There's so many journeys.
I'm not a right answer, wrong answer teacher. I'm a can you defend this in a logical, like rhetorically sound way? And if you can, I'll go along with
you. So to all the prospective lawyers out there, all the prospective trial lawyers.
They should all go through my English class. Yeah. That's right. you would not have this as your final product for that end assignment because you would have done some revision to make it make sense.
Grizel, you're driving downtown. Song comes on the radio. Downtown, baby.
Yes, downtown. Downtown Bloomfield.
Bloomfield. Okay. You're out in the field. You're cruising around in your Cadillac that you've just struck a pose on.
Correct.
Song comes on the radio. Windows down, radio up. Singing along?
For sure. 100%.
100%, Katie?
Yes.
Same. Absolutely. And I have to drive with my knee because I'm also doing the dance while I'm
all
driving.
Right. So all of you drivers in the northern New Jersey area, if you ever see a Honda Fit blasting Bengals...
Just pull over because I'm dangerous.
Would you at least throw your hazard lights on?
Yeah, kudos on saying Bengals.
I finally learned, guys. I've gotten the finger out and pointed it at myself to see what it must be like for you. And I've learned to say Bengals. So tonight has really been...
You're growing as a person.
I'm growing as a human being. Yeah. Windows down, radio up. Absolutely. I'm not getting any of the words correct.
You take artistic license and just, you know, kind of put your own spin on it.
But in a way, the words are the least important part of this song.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is the OA OA.
Yeah.
I'm whistling for sure.
For sure.
Yeah.
I'm saying Egyptian.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Which I feel fancy saying that.
Yeah. It feels good.
It feels good.
I'm saying Kremlin, even though I'm morally opposed to.
And everything in between, I'm probably just making up about my own day. I'm like, she drives in the car and does the thing.
With her knees, it causes a big accident.
Yeah. I actually like the line. I'm trying to pick out my favorite line in this, in the lyrics.
Golden crocodiles, right?
No, actually for me, I kind of think it's kind of vampy to be like, oh, you know, those foreign types with the hookah pipes.
I like that line.
I like that line.
I like the internal rhyme of types and pipes there.
Yeah, I kind of like that. And it makes me feel like I have heavy eyeliner on. You know,
like an Egyptian, with the curl around the curl.
Like I need to, like this is, I feel like I do have a bangle on.
Right.
Then let me just tell you the feeling of the thing. I have heavy eyeliner on. I'm talking to a girlfriend about the foreign types. She's like, I don't even have to say what type of foreign types.
Sure.
Like, the foreign types with the hookah pipes, you know.
Mm-hmm. And she, you know the ones.
It's that tag of, you know.
You know the ones. And that's what I would be. And maybe wearing a headdress.
So,
I'm having fun saying that. Yeah.
That's what it inspires in me.
Let me ask you two this. So the Bengals broke up for 10 years, reunited in 1999, and have been going strong. Three of the four original members, but three of the four prime members of the Bengals are still touring. Would you see them live?
I would.
Yeah. I would.
I think it'd be fun.
I'd love to see like a 80s revival. Like
get them and Belinda Carlisle together.
I have a proposition for a festival. I don't have any funding, so I'd like somebody else to do it. A Ladies of the 80s festival.
Thank you.
Wow. Can you call it Laties?
The Laties?
Ladies of the 80s is good.
I like Ladies of the 80s.
I like that too. Ladies of the 80s.
Give me some Pat Benatar. Right. Cyndi Lauper.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm loving that.
Martika.
Yeah. I don't know who that is.
Get up there and sing Toy Soldiers. Bore everyone to death for 4 minutes.
99 Luft. Balloons.
Oh, yes. Nina, yeah. Katrina and the Waves. Get them all up on stage for the Ladies of the 80s, guys.
Yeah.
And even, I mean, like, and we can even like cross-mogenate and bring the Runaways and she can just leave one band for
the other. Lita Ford, Joan Jett do solo sets. Well, Lita Ford does one song. I just want Kiss Me Deadly. That's it. That's all anybody wants. Then you pull up Bengals.
Yeah.
And then you do a Runaways reunion.
Yeah. And, you know, I'd love to be like where she just drops her guitar, you know, during her set with the Runaways and just kind of do a song with the Bangles. And
be
like,
sick.
It's happening in real time.
This sounds like the most fun ever. Somebody make it happen.
Guys,
we don't have the fun.
Don't steal our idea. We deserve the money for this.
Yes.
No, steal our idea. Just like
somebody make this
give
happen.
Us free tickets.
You know.
So Grizel, before we get out of here, do you have any dates coming up that you want to promote?
Yeah, loads of dates. So January 19th, I have a show at Rhino Comedy.
That's the club in Suffern.
Is that
what you said?
Suffern. That's correct. And I believe that's a Saturday. And January 9th, my monthly show, Good Vibes Only in Bloomfield, will be happening at Town Pub. Overripe Comedy in New York City on January 22nd. And January 5th, Rhino Comedy in Suffern. So that's what I have for now. So yeah.
And this will be out early January, so then people can listen and come see you because you're wonderful.
That would be great. Come on out, guys.
And what about social media?
Social media, you can find me on Instagram at GC Spice.
Ooh.
Yes.
I didn't know you were a Spice Girl.
Oh, yes. I am.
Still.
Yeah, that'll be the next one. We can do Spice Girls.
That would be so much fun. Please
that would
come
be
back
so
and do the
much
Spice
fun
Girls.
To do the Spice Girls. And on Facebook.
Oh, boy.
Oh, wow. Grizel, and on Facebook, Grizel Cabrera.
And with that, I just want to say thank you to everybody who's listening. Again, if you have any questions, comments, concerns, song suggestions, please reach out to us. Our email address is decompositionpod@gmail.com. You can find us on Twitter @decomp_pod, Facebook and Instagram, Decomposition Podcast. If you happen to find yourself over on the Apple Podcast app or iTunes and you want to drop us a rating and a review, we would really appreciate it. That would really help us get our profile out there. If you like what you are hearing, please tell your friends, tell your enemies. We would love to see this grow in the coming year. And Katie, you got anything else?
Nah, that's it.
That is it. Thank you guys again for listening. And you just chill till the next episode.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Joe Shipley.